Hi, my name is Daniel Sloss. And I feel privileged about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Oh my God, I love that. I love that you, A, feel privileged, but more the way you say Conan is fantastic. Conan. It was fantastic. It had a little Sean Connery in there. I mean, literally, a tiny Sean Connery came out of your mouth and waved at me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was the one that made sure I just got the lisp correctly.
O'Brien. When you cough, when, say you have a chest cold, do thousands of small Sean Conneries come spilling out of your mouth?
Yeah, that's what we thought COVID was originally in Scotland. We just thought...
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello there and welcome to a humble little podcast known as Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Very happy to be joined by Sonam Avsesyan, my trusty assistant.
Hi, Conan.
Nice to have you back. And mm-hmm. Twins still doing well?
Yep, they're still there.
I wish you had a higher bar for your children than they're still there. Are they thriving?
They're thriving.
Good.
They are thriving. They're good. Really great kids.
They are so beautiful,
they're
too.
They
are such good-looking boys.
They are very cute.
They're going to be heartbreakers.
Oh. Well, I don't want them to break hearts.
Well, they're going to. They're going to break people's hearts. Shatter. They're going to shatter lives. Okay. They're going to ruin so many people's lives with their good looks and their animal magnetism. So anyway, that's your legacy. Misery. You know, it is very complicated here at Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend because... You just came back.
I did.
You just came back. You've been out for quite a while now, over 3 months. And Matt Gourley, our trusty, executive producer. What is his title again? Engineer?
He's a producer.
He's a producer. But what do you say? Executive producer? What do you say?
He's not an executive producer.
He isn't. God damn it. No. He never will be as long as I'm, you know.
How do you not know what he does?
I'm sorry. And I've said this before.
Oh, come on.
But a pharaoh.
Don't do the pharaoh thing.
A pharaoh doesn't know where each stone goes in the pyramid or who placed the stone there.
Okay.
A pharaoh just occasionally checks out the pyramid and is either pleased or displeased.
Yeah.
So anyway, Matt Gourley, producer, wonderful producer, is out. Because he and his lovely wife.
Yes, Amanda,
had a baby.
A baby girl.
We will not reveal the name. I'm pretty sure it's Gertruden. Gertruden Gourley. It's not, but I really wish it was Gertruden Gourley.
Did you send her a tweed onesie?
I know. I sent over an I Like Ike tweed diaper. The most uncomfortable diaper ever made. Yeah. It says, I like Ike across the butt.
A vintage diaper.
It's a vintage diaper. It's got an asbestos lining. It was made in 1951, and I got it in an antique shop. Aww. And I got her a little lute with lots of sharp, spiky parts. So we're really happy for Matt Gourley.
Yes, very
but
happy.
This also means that, man, we're like a championship team that keeps having star players drop out, you know, except instead of a groin pull, it's creating life.
Yeah.
And so I do not fear because we have someone filling in for Matt Gourley, who I'm told is the best in the business.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just saying that to piss off Matt Gourley and his name.
Yeah.
His name is Brett Morris.
Here I am.
Brett, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Would you call yourself the best in the business?
No, I would never call myself that. That feels insane to call
okay.
myself.
Okay, because that would feel wrong, but deep down I can see your thought balloon. You think I'm right on.
Mm.
You think you can eat Matt Gourley's lunch. You're so much better at producing than him, don't you?
Yeah, fuck Matt Gourley.
Yeah, fucking Gourley. Right?
I do kind of like this.
Is it true that when you screw up in the studio, you say, pulled a Gourley? Is that what people say in the business?
Yeah, I like any time I hear of Matt Gourley making any mistake of any kind, because he just seems, he's such a graceful human being, and he's handsome. And
I'm so ungracious.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what works, is that when Matt makes a mistake or an error of some kind or slightly misspeaks, my reaction to it is so savage and so wrong that the contrast, I think, is just fascinating to people.
I think so, too. Yeah. Do you think that there's a part of you that's like a little jealous of Matt because he can do so much stuff, like edit podcasts and build tables and stuff, and you're just angry?
Yeah, he didn't hand whittle a canoe.
Yes. He can do a lot of things. I can make ramen if it's the kind that you drop in the boiling thing that has an envelope, those little pouches with chicken stock.
Oh, yeah, with the powder.
Yes. I make that really well. Guess what? Get it boiling, leave it for 3 minutes, turn off the heat, then add the packet and stir.
Ooh.
Then you can add some pepper. That's what I can do. I don't see Matt Gourley doing that. Do you?
No, I have a feeling he's making 3-course meals.
Yes,
every night.
He's also baking. He's got a kiln and he's making the bowl that the soup will go in. And once he's done using that bowl, he smashes it. Brett, tell me a little bit about yourself so I can find a weakness and then I can attack you.
Oh God. No.
Okay. Well,
where are you from? You know, what's your story, Brett?
Yeah, I'm originally from the Bay Area, like Silicon Valley area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a musician. Mm-hmm. Been in various bands. Currently in a band.
What's your instrument?
Guitar mainly.
Yeah,
that's something we can bond over.
What's the name of your band?
Man Man.
Man Man.
That's the name of my band. Yeah.
M-A-N-M-A-N.
M-A-N-M-A-N, yes.
So at this time when men are being called into account for centuries of misbehavior...
We're doubling down.
You doubled down on Man. That was your decision.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have to talk to the front man about that.
Yeah, oh.
Well, there's a third man.
Well, I never assume that the person leading the band is a man. When you said you're going to have to talk to the... I just thought, well, who is she? But of course, in Man Man, it's a man. Because that's how you guys roll. Brett, I think you're in really deep water. I really do.
Yeah.
I think you should change the name of your band immediately to Women Are the Future. And your first album should be Sorry About That Last Name.
Yes.
Think seriously about what I'm telling you.
It's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I want to check you guys out sometime. Maybe I could rock with you, huh? Have I got the chops to rock with you guys?
Anytime. We recorded our album right here where I'm sitting. So, come over, we'll jam.
Hmm.
Do you take lead ever? Do you like to solo?
I play a very choppy lead, a very crude lead, but it's got a lot of heart in it.
Okay.
It's got what did you say, Sona?
What did I say?
When I grab a lead guitar solo, I wouldn't say there's a lot of finesse there.
I disagree. I think you're harder on yourself than you should be. I think you're a great guitarist. But yeah, you're not Slash.
Oh my God. No, I can't afford that hat. That's an incredible hat.
You think the hat is the only thing that differentiates you?
You know
what's
so fascinating? I've seen him play without the hat.
Yeah.
He's terrible. He's awful. When he puts the hat on, suddenly he's Slash.
Yeah.
One of the worst sounds I ever heard was coming out of this rehearsal space once. Awful. Just clunky, awful, crude. And I walked in and it was Slash, Saul Hudson, without his hat.
Right.
And it was like a kid that picked up a guitar and had peanut butter on his fingers.
Under the brim of his hat, he's got the tabs of all the songs.
He's got the tablature, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly how to play the chords. No, it's all about the hat with him.
I love him so much.
Okay, yeah.
He's my first crush.
That's true. That's right. And you got to meet him through who? How'd you meet him?
Don't do that.
Now, how'd you meet Slash? I'm curious.
Through you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, whatever. All roads lead to Gunnin.
Don't do that song.
I changed your life. I changed your life.
What an awful song.
I'm the reason you met your husband and you've got your family. You owe me everything.
Wow.
I said everything, everything. Owe me everything. I said boom, 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 boom.
What an awful song that was.
Brett, did you like that song I just sang?
I'm rethinking the invitation to jam with us at this point.
Run, Brett, run as fast as you can. Run away.
I'm sorry. Well, do you play a lot of live gigs?
Well, not these days.
Right. I forgot about COVID.
Yeah.
I live in kind of a... Brett, I don't know if it's clear to you, but I live in kind of a bubble. I literally had a giant bubble built around my home. A lot of celebrities are doing this.
Yeah.
So I've not been aware of COVID for 2 years.
So the bubble had nothing to do with COVID.
Oh, I built it long before COVID.
Okay.
I just didn't like humans and people.
It's the Hollywood elite
bubble. Yeah, and I heard that this is something that people did. I've hired thousands of people to recreate normal life for me inside the bubble. Well, I want to check you guys out sometime. I want to see you play.
Oh, my God. I would be honored.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Well, it's not going to happen.
You know that. Okay.
You know that, right? I say things to sound like a amiable chap on the air, but it can't happen. You understand that?
I do get that. Usually you don't take back the formality instantly right after you say it.
It's occurring to me now that I'm doing this while we're recording.
I know.
But, you know, let's let it all hang out there. I will never see you play. So aren't I way too busy? My schedule's just jammed.
If that's what you want me to say, then that's what I will say.
I've never had more free time in my life.
He has nothing going on.
No, I definitely will, Brett. I definitely want to check you out. Okay. So it'll be fun. And I mean, I'm going to check you out.
What?
What'd you say?
Sona, that's okay.
Okay.
Sona, it's okay.
Okay.
Let it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, welcome aboard, Brett.
Thank you so much. It's big shoes to fill.
It's nice to have you here. And I think the rumors are true. I think you're much better than Gourley.
Already,
I hope that gets out there. Because you heard it from Brett. He said he's better than Gourley.
We're going to start producer beef.
So that's what I definitely want to do. It's going to be like East Side, West Side. All right, we have a terrific show today. My guest is a hilarious comedian who made his U.S. television debut performing stand-up comedy on my show in 2013, and he was brilliant, always has been. His new book, Everyone You Hate Is Going to Die, such a sweet message, is available now, and he's currently touring his new show, Hubris. Tickets and dates can be found at danielsloss.com. Now, that probably gave it away. I am thrilled he's here with us today. Daniel Sloss, welcome. I am very, very happy to have you on the podcast. I think we started having you on our show, I think in, I want to say 2013, somewhere around there.
Yes. And I've never, because of the way the show is run, so very officially, and so, you know, you get there, everyone's phenomenal at their job, including yourself.
Well, thank you for putting me in that category.
Well, I've seen the show and how it's run. I know you're not doing the heavy lifting.
Of course not. I am the man that walks around the structure and says, good job, everyone. Nicely done. A little more paint on that steeple. You know, I'm looking at the cathedral and occasionally making suggestions, and then I'm off to the bar. Yeah.
Designation is your true skill.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've never truly got to thank you, because every single time I've done the show, you've had me on, I've done stand up, you come, you say hello at the end, and then I'm sort of whisked away to be congratulated by all the sort of people. But man, I would not have the career I have today if it were not for you and for Conoco. And every time we've been on the show, I've never had the time to just sort of sit down and thank you for taking a chance on me when, like, nobody else in the States would.
Well, Daniel, that is the reason I had you on the podcast. I wanted my proper thanks. Aww. Because you are a massive, very influential comedian now with a brilliant career. And I gave you your start. That's all I wanted to hear. I think we're out of time. We're out of time, Daniel.
Well, I finally got closure after so many appearances. Finally, I'm like, I said it. It's fine. I can die.
I want to say, in fairness, I often said to you after your appearances, that was brilliant. Is there anything you'd like to say to me? And you always said, gotta go. Got things to do. And then I would see you hours later hanging around the studio with fucking nothing to do.
I was basking in the ambiance of the relaxed atmosphere you helped create.
Yes, yes, yes. No, you know, you're still so young, and you started on my show almost 10 years ago. I think you must have been 11 years old when you started on my show. You were such a young bonny lad, I'll say.
Yeah, 23. And I remember it so well because I couldn't believe I was coming over. Like J.P. Buck had come out to the...
And let me do a preface, because no one listening knows who J.P. Buck is. J.P. Buck is a man who dresses like the professor on Gilligan's Island. chinos and a button-up shirt. Claims to know a lot and claims to love comedy. We're not sure. I suspect he's a very good landscape architect. But anyway, no, he is. J.P. Buck needs a shout out because he has, for years and years and years, been finding people like Daniel Sloss. And this sounds like it's an easy thing to do, but it's not an easy thing to do. He found Daniel Sloss and said, I just found this basically a fetus. in Scotland who's very funny, and we should have him on. And he would work with you on your sets. And I trust JP greatly because he has an unerring eye and ear for great stand-up comedians. So yes, just mutual shout out to JP Buck. I'm as grateful to JP as you are, Daniel.
Yeah, he came to see my show. He asked if I wanted to come on. He went through my set with me. I went to the Comedy Work in Denver a couple of times to like run the set through to make sure that it made sense to an American audience because it was my first time properly doing it. And then, like, I remember being on the flight to LA, and I don't know if you get this, but just like this fear that everything's going to be taken away from you. Like, I feel so lucky to have gotten so far in my career. Like, I always feel like everything's a bonus and things might not happen. And I remember being on the flight and going, something's going to happen and I'm not going to get on the show. Like, somebody's going to overrun or there's going to be technical difficulties and then I won't get on it. And then they'll just be like, okay, we made a mistake as well and we can't have you back on at any other point. And I just remember, and I'm so excited to be getting over it. And then we get to Warner Brothers Studios and Nelson Mandela dies. And I remember just being the most selfish person in the entire world and sitting backstage at Conan going, well, I'm not going to be on the show then, am I? Because fucking Nelson Mandela died. Like, this is unbelievable. On my big day? They're going to talk about this for a night.
Yeah. You know, that was the worldwide reaction to Nelson Mandela's death was, will Daniel Sloss get screwed?
I know.
No, I mean, first of all, I love how honest you're being because we are all, I mean, especially comedians, but we are all that solipsistic. We are all that self-involved. We are all, it is, if I had a particularly good bit one night that I knew that we shot a remote and we've already screened it for an audience and it kills and this is going to be on tonight and we work so hard on it and they announce that night that a meteor is headed to Earth, we all have 11 hours to live, my first thought would have been, what about that piece? That piece was going to air tonight. That thing was great.
Can we bring it forward?
Yeah. Can we show it quickly? Oh, no. Then everyone who sees it's going to die right afterwards. That's no good.
How did they just do the global announcement for the meteor? Can we get my sketch on that channel?
Yes.
Can we make sure it's the last
Who's
thing everyone sees?
Who's broadcasting about the meteor? How do we get a slot in there so I can show the piece where I go with Ice Cube to a chiropractor? Because I swear to God, that's a good piece. I wish I had gone to a chiropractor with Ice Cube, but I didn't. I'm just going to narrate now. You just removed your sweater, and you did it in a way that guys who
I really hoped you weren't noticing. Like, I could feel sweat trickling down my back because it's quite hot in New York today, and I want to...
You just reached down, and you whipped it off in this very smooth motion that I would not have been able to pull off, you know, literally.
It's the move of a man who was constantly surprised whenever a woman was willing to have sex with him, so I just learned to, like, quick, before they change their mind, get it all off. Come on.
You know, for the very same reason, I had all my clothes were Velcroed on. So in the 80s and 90s, if a woman showed any interest at all in sex, with one pull, my tuxedo would come completely off with a ripping sound.
Yeah. And just you in the original mankini. Borat stole it from you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I was delighted to be able to talk to you because you have a book out, Everyone You Hate Is Going to Die. And that, I wish I had had this book years ago when my children were little, because I would have read it to them just before they went to bed. And now for another chapter of Everyone You Hate Is Going to Die, and then turn off the lights and go, night, night. Yeah.
It's a positive message, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so much in here because my favorite thing that I've ever done in comedy is whenever we've been able to travel and I get to do foolish, time-wasting silliness in other countries. It's my absolute favorite thing to do. And I have not made my way to Scotland yet. I have a caveat to that. I touched down in Scotland once briefly. My feet have touched Scottish soil.
I know that. We have a plaque there now that says Conan O'Brien once stood here.
Yes. Now, first of all, the fact that I put that plaque down and had it pre-made...
You just have those.
You know what I do?
You've got like 50 in your bag.
I have a backpack. I have a giant backpack, and I carry tons of these bronze plaques that say Conan O'Brien stood here. And whenever I stand anywhere, and sometimes I've... There are hundreds of them at the local Whole Foods, just because I go there once a weekend to buy melons. And so I just keep, people have said like, one's and I think enough. And I'm like, no, there should be one for each time. But I'm fascinated with Scotland. My wife is mixed heritage and she has a lot of Scottish blood. And I think she's the better for it. I am, as I've mentioned, 100% Irish, pure 103% Irish. But I'm fascinated by the Scotch people and Scotland.
You've done Ireland though, right?
I've been to Ireland, and I want to know, explain Scotland to me. First of all, if you're any indication, you people swear like crazy. You're artists at swearing.
Yeah, like it's just part of the language mainly. I mean, we still get the occasional pearl clutcher in Edinburgh and stuff who gets offended by swearing, but it's absolutely, like, I learned swear words from a young age, and the only reason they ever had power was because other people gave them power. Like, I heard adults swearing, I heard teachers swearing. Like, they tried to hide it from you. They weren't, effing and jeffing in the classroom and stuff, but... I remember once when, I think it was about 8 or 9, I'd got in trouble because I think I'd said like fuck in the playground or something. And then my mum had to come into school and they told her, and I went home and my mum was like, you can't swear. And I said, why not? And she was like, well, because, and my dad was like, you can't tell him not to do something if you can't justify it. Like,
yes.
It has to be a lot.
And wait a minute. Like, you had a reasonable father?
I did. A very reasonable
and
father.
And he applied logic to conversations with your mother.
Yes.
This is more fascinating than Scotland.
Well,
there's so much I need to learn from you.
They're outliers.
Yeah.
And he was like, if you can't explain to him why he's not allowed to say these things, then you can't tell him not to say them. That doesn't make sense. And I remember my mum just being like, all right, okay, well, don't do it in school and don't do it in front of your gran because it upsets those people and I don't want to be seen as a bad parent. And I was like, oh, great. Well, I can keep that end of the bargain.
Well, you have a great joke in your book about how ubiquitous and common swearing is in Scotland. And it's about when you go to buy a computer keyboard in Scotland.
Yeah, there's no space bar. It's just the word fucking. that's from when I grew up, especially in Fife, like that's our version of like you go, what's his fucking, fucking what's his face from fucking, from, he was on Conan last week, the fucking, no, not the woman, the fucking bloke, the one with the fucking hair. Like,
my favorite jokes are visual and have this visual truth to them. And so when I read that joke, I started laughing. And then I was just picturing someone trying to write something very erudite on their computer keyboard in Scotland. Do you know what I mean? Which is, well, the male, of course, moth must reproduce because, and then they hit the fucking. And then, of course, everyone in Scotland reads it and they don't even notice. It just looks like a space to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got the reason swearing works a lot better in Scotland is because our vowels are short, and that's the key for swearing. Swearing should never dominate a sentence. It should always just sort of be like fuck, shit, cunt, like that's bastard, bitch. You see how, like, that's very, whereas when Americans swear, because you guys sing everything because you're happy, like when you swear, you say fuck. Yeah. Bastard, motherfucker. And you're like, like, that's not how it's meant to be
that's
done.
That's exactly how I say it. You bastard.
Bastard.
Wow, you got me down. You also talk about the reason pot never quite made it in Scotland as a drug. So popular here and so popular in many parts of the world. But why did pot never quite make it in Scotland?
I have no idea. Like, originally, I thought it was just like a sun-based thing. And I'm like, anything that requires sun to grow is just not going to grow in Scotland.
Like,
we got over that. Like, sunflowers, we've seen pictures of them, but we've never seen a real one. You know.
Right.
We have plants that grow in burns and forests and rivers and whatnot. But it's just not... it's not bleak enough. Like, we like beer, but we prefer whiskey. We like, you know, gin. We need stuff that makes us sad and dour, and heroin is better for them. It's just a,
right.
It's a more popular drug because.
Do you start with the whiskey and then the heroin, or is it the heroin? Is the whiskey that
depends on the pub?
Oh, I see. Okay. We'll get a whiskey and heroin over here. It's got like a train spotting. I think
yeah.
For Americans, I know for me anyway, we have been shown this picture of Scotland. Which, of course, everyone is shown first the cliche, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember growing up just outside Boston, practically in the city, but right there on this suburb next to Boston. And, you know, we were always, there were these commercials for Irish Spring soap. And it was always people talking like this and a little bit of, and the man would say, he'd rub the Irish Spring on his chest, the soap, and he'd go, ah, manly, yes. And then a beautiful woman would lean in and go, ah, but I like it too. And it was all very beautiful and very sort of leprechaun-y and nice. Then I got to know these neighbors moved in next door, and they were old guys who were from Ireland, two twin brothers, the Murphys and their sister. And they moved in, and these guys were in their, I want to say their 60s, and they were real people from real Ireland. And I remembered it would snow, and I'd go out to the garage, and one of our chores was to dig out the snow so that the cars could get out. And I'd be there digging the snow, and one of the Murphy brothers would come up next to me, and he'd be digging out his snow. And I'd say, oh, hello there, Mr. Murphy. And I was expecting him to go like, ah, well, it's nice to see you, young lad. But instead he'd go, you got a whole snow in your throat and your hurt, but you never got an all his kind of hair, because it's all 20. I couldn't understand a thing he was saying. And that's how Irish people really talk. They talk like pirates whose teeth have been broken in an automobile accident. That's how they really are. There's none of this bullshit. And that's what I felt like train spotting was the wake-up call for the rest of the world, that you don't understand Scotland. It's not what you think.
Yeah, and it's, man, one of the things I do really enjoy about coming to America is just hearing every American's impression of Scottish people, because, you know, everyone's got one, and none of them are good.
No.
Like, it's all, everything just starts off with like they make sure they just get all the right amount of phlegm in their throat, and then they're like, and I think you say, oh, hi, the new, and then heel and coo, whiskey, and you're like, aye, all right, yeah, sure, that's why I said.
Well, listen, I'm going to break some news to you, Daniel. We are not a country known for our sensitivity towards other cultures.
I know, but I thought you'd like us, because like the number one thing I hear is people go, and especially in America, they're like, hey, my ancestors are Scottish. I'm like, I know they are. You're white. That's how this country works. Like, if you are white and American, your ancestors are absolutely from where I'm from.
Yeah.
That's how this country
is
made.
Or thereabouts. Yeah, it's England, Ireland, Scotland. That's why I'm always confused. I'm not a, you know, on St. Patrick's Day, I hide, because people, I'm known in this country. I stand out a little bit, and people, I'm so Irish that people want me to be wearing a big button that says, kiss me, I'm Irish, Éireann go brath, Ireland, yay, Ireland. And I don't feel it. I just feel like there's like 40% of the country is of Irish descent, where it doesn't feel like anything exotic. Do you know what I mean? It just feels like there's a bunch of us.
Yeah, well, Ireland's also not exotic. Like, nobody's, I don't know when the last time you were there, but there's no point where you're like, oh, I like what they've done to the place. They've really changed it in the past 200 years. Like, still,
yeah.
It's been sad for a while, and I love Ireland, but they know what they are.
Yeah, I mean, I've been over to Ireland countless times, and I've noticed that, and maybe there's a kinship with Scotland here, and I'll ask you, you can tell me, but there's something going on in the overall UK, which I know I'm painting with a broad brush here, but
yeah,
there's maybe a cynicism, maybe even a healthy cynicism about things, and kind of people aren't walking around saying, have a, you know, wonderful day. And, you know, it's not that. It's, and I wonder sometimes, is it because it's raining most of the time and we had to heat our fires with peat. Peat moss, yeah, you know. I mean, how much of it is just the climate? Is it because of the climate?
I think the climate's got a lot to do with it. Like, I mean, it rains a lot in Scotland. I always get like Americans and Australians who are like, man, I think Scotland's beautiful, but I could never live there for the weather. And I'm like, man, you know, we say the same thing about you, right?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't live in California. If I was constantly in that sun, I would evaporate and die. Like, I'm miserable when I'm hot.
I have to say, I think I agree with you. And Sona, I've talked about this many times.
Yeah.
I don't belong here. I live.
No.
My career took me to Southern California, and I've been here now two different periods of my life. Three different periods of my life. I've lived in Los Angeles, whether it was working for The Simpsons or early in my comedy career, or then coming back here to do the Conan show for TBS. And I'm constantly, every cell in my body is saying, "You don't belong here." And when
this isn't right.
When it does rain here and get dark, last week it got dark and it rained. And I was the happiest I've been. I was joyous. And everyone else doesn't understand. And I just was saying, no, every cell in my body is saying, yes, ass. This is what where you're supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be near the Mexican border. I'm just not.
Yeah. It's that weather you're talking about, the Scottish word for it is dreichit. And it's dreichit weather. It's miserable. It's like raining, but it's not thunderstorms. But there's just a constant presence of water in the air. And it's dark by, 4 or 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And that's it. Like, where you find your joy elsewhere. We don't get our joy from the weather. We get our joy from... hating the English and
yeah, let's talk about that. You talk about that in your book, and I wanted to bring this up. You, I have your book right here because you see, I'm a guy that reads books. Yeah. Okay, this is a chapter 5. Countries are people too, just bigger and even worse. And I'll just of course, the first sentence is, I fucking hate England. And then you go on and on and on. And then you go, but I fucking hate England, man, all caps. You're not kidding about this space bar. I'm Scottish. No matter how much I love parts of England, I fucking hate England. Nothing makes me happier than watching those tartan-dodging gammon shaggers get knocked out of another World Cup and crying because they expected too much. Again, inject those tears into my veins and I live to be 150 years old.
I may have written that chapter while drinking whiskey. I may have got a little bit of national pride in me. Painted my face blue.
So it's funny because as a comedian, you love the audiences in England.
Yeah, and man, and also most of my friends are English, and I love parts of the country. I love so many things about England, but I hate England as a whole and what it is. Like, you've got to remember, Scotland is part of the UK still, and we sort of just end up with whatever government the English vote for. And Scotland has never in its history voted for a conservative government, but we've had one for 40 out of the last 50 years.
Right.
And it's not our fault, and that's why we hate the English. And historically, they're bastards. And originally it was like very amicable. Well, not very amicable, but I feel like a lot of the hatred of the English was like... mostly banter, like it was traditional. We hated them in sporting competitions. We were happy when they lost. But you'd always get on with any English person that you were near and drinking with, and you'd go down there and enjoy their booze. And then before the Scottish independence vote, about 6 or 7 years ago, like in Scotland, we were told that if Scotland left the UK, it would automatically be kicked out of the EU. Because the UK was part of the EU, and that swung the vote for a lot of Scottish people, because we like the EU because we're a small country that doesn't matter, and it was made for
us. Benefit a great deal, and you can travel freely throughout the rest of Europe.
Yeah, whereas, so Scotland voted no for independence, becoming the first country in the history of the world to vote no on it, and it was by about 4%, which, isn't a lot. And then, when Brexit happened, 2/3 of Scotland voted no to Brexit because we didn't want it at all, because we like you. But again, it doesn't matter what Scotland wants. Whatever England wants, England gets. And it dragged us out. So we were told that we had to stay in the Union to stay in the EU. And then they dragged us out. And now we're like, oh, well, now we actually hate you.
Yeah.
Like, before it was just a bit of banter, but you've really screwed us on this.
They screwed you over. They screwed you over badly. How do the Scottish people feel about the Irish?
We've got, there's an affinity there. The Scots and the Irish and the Welsh all have this sort of, you know, we like to make fun of the bigger, stronger, older brother. And
yes.
There's a lot of Celtic heritage between Scotland and Ireland. And, you know, we both like booze. We both, you know, have very interesting relationships with religion historically.
Yes. What a nice way to put it. Let's talk about that. You are not religious.
No, I'm not.
And I want to touch on something briefly. You and I have, in addition to both stumbling into comedy and having absolutely no melanin in our skin, the other thing we have in common is, which I find fascinating, is that your mother is quite a well-known microbiologist.
Yeah.
As is my father.
That's, oh, really?
Yes. My father, Dr. Thomas F. O'Brien, has been working in microbiology since like the Eisenhower administration. He's been preaching about antibiotic resistance. My dad has been working hard on that and still is. And wow. I won't give away his age, but I'm 85. And my father had me when he was 55. So, and he's still going. He's just a torso now, but he is. he's a torso with two fingers, but he's still clacking away. And when I read that in your book, I thought, wait a minute, that's crazy. We both have, and it's a very specific field, microbiology. So both of our parents, and my mom is a very smart woman who was a lawyer in Boston for many, many, many years. So I kind of feel like you and I both have, and I know your dad's a super tech nerd.
Yeah, yeah. So my parents are very, very intelligent. But you also, man, you went to Harvard, right?
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
Well, I mean
what happens is, you know, it doesn't mean you're a moral person, certainly, because I think the people who invented Agent Orange, I think they invented it at Harvard, and they got full course.
I just thought that was your nickname at Harvard. Here comes Agent Orange again.
Yeah, and I was equally apparently, people were as happy to see me as they were the real Agent Orange. I've said this many times, and I did go to Harvard, and I was proud of a lot of things that I did there and proud of a lot of the people that I met there. But I tell people all the time, it's not Hogwarts. It's not this magical place. I met all kinds of people. When I say all kinds of people, you go to any university or college and you're going to meet, and I don't care what you're talking about, you could talk about MIT, you're going to meet people that really disappoint you and people that really inspire you. And
yeah, but I feel like you had to be a certain level of intellectual to get into Harvard, whereas I am
a very, very brilliant man.
But there we go.
That's the second reason I had you on the podcast, and now we're out of time. So let's summarize. Daniel Sloss owes his career to me, and I'm a very brilliant man.
Yeah, very smart, brilliant man.
And we're out. Now it's time to do some commercials.
You've got smart parents. Because my parents were very smart, and I always, like, that was just an inspiration for me to, like, be smart. Because I was like, that's what, my parents both have degrees, they're both intelligent. Like, when I was young, I could ask them a question about anything, and they'd give me the answer. You know, my dad ruined the Loch Ness Monster for me when I was 8 years old, because we drove past Loch Ness. And I was like, oh, maybe we'll see the monster. And he, like, pretty much pulled over the car and then just explained to me, like, because of the volume of water in Loch Ness, animal that size would have to eat this amount of fish. And there's just not that amount of fish in a enclosed lake. And it would be impossible for, like, just 8 years old.
And just then, Daniel, and then did you bring up Santa Claus? Again, full halt. To deliver 6 toys to every child in the world in the span of 24 hours.
It would not be impossible.
The statistical anomaly. Man, your dad just ripping through all. Okay, how about Tooth Fairy, Dad? You understand that to have cash on hand.
Why does it need the teeth, Daniel? That's the question we should all be asking. What is this mystical creature that profits off of teeth? What is it doing with the teeth? Why does it have human currency? Why does it know what we want? And why is it only the baby teeth, huh? They never want the adult teeth. That would be him, yeah. None of it makes sense.
Yeah, and he doesn't point out the similarities to a serial killer. Collecting teeth is, yeah. I mean, really, we should all be looking for the Tooth Fairy. The Tooth Fairy, I'm sure, needs to be hunted down and immediately arrested and then detained like Hannibal Lecter, because if teeth collecting, strangers, the teeth of children, and you've got just giant mountains of it back home in your basement, that's a problem. That's a problem.
And where do they get the money from? They must be selling it. Like, they're making a profit off of the teeth.
Right.
If they're willing to hand out $1, $2, $10, then I don't know how much the Tooth Fairy gives over here.
Well, here on the west side of Los Angeles, it's $700 for each tooth.
Okay.
Yeah. And you also get you get a Rolex watch.
Great.
In addition.
Yeah, in Scotland, she just leaves the tooth there, and she's like, "Jesus, that's a horrendous bit of chewing machinery there."
Better put that back in. No, you are not religious. And you're not afraid to talk about some quite bleak things and be quite honest about things. You did a very well known. Stand-up special called Jigsaw, and talking about toxic relationships and a toxic relationship that you had, and you have verification through people communicating with you that you've been the cause of 120,000 breakups just from people listening to you on Jigsaw. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's higher than that now. We stopped counting about 2 years ago, but like I still get every show I do. I'll have at least 3 or 4 people afterwards being like, "Hey, I left my partner because of you," with a smile on their face, like they're very happy. It's never a.
And what was the? I know it's very hard to boil it down, but what was the essence of your message to people that caused them to break up? Because we have a lot of people listen to this podcast, and if we can cause more breakups,
more powerful.
Yes, you'll grow more powerful.
It was essentially there is this lie that I think society breeds into us. That being in a relationship is better than being alone. And I disagree with that. I think being in a good relationship is better than being alone. But being alone is infinitely better than being in a bad relationship. And I think that's an important distinction. Like, people are so desperate to be in a relationship because that's what we're meant to do, that they just go, "I'll stay with this person who's shit and boring and mean and doesn't get on with any of my friends and doesn't really like me, but I'm going to stay there because I would much rather wake up with them than wake up alone." And I think that's an insane way to live your life.
I agree with you completely. And I have to go home and talk to my wife.
Oh, man, I think that would be one of the ones where I felt like real guilty.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know what's interesting? I'll be very honest. And I think it's something you talk about very well in your comedy. One of your lines is you are not responsible for the happiness of other human beings. You believe that. And I think your caveat is that, you know, you don't want to go around being needlessly cruel to people. But if your goal is to go out and try and make everyone happy, you're going to create a lot of misery in your own way, and especially in these relationships where there is a need to be selfish. I had to sound like Dr. Phil for a second, but you know, I made a conscious decision. I remembered very shortly before I met my wife saying, "Look, I remembered very clearly. I remember where I was. I remember thinking to myself and saying it almost out loud, I don't need to be with anybody and I don't want to rescue anybody. I don't want this myth of me coming in and saving someone from a miserable life. I want to meet someone who's equally happy to be with me as I am with them." And that was a huge change because I had, you know, it's just the way I was raised. But I think I really did believe that it was my job to make other people happy. And I think that was also a big reason why I got into comedy and why I was so drawn to it. I love making people happy. And I have a little bit of an addiction to it. And Sonia, you've probably seen it sometimes where I can't not, like if I'm doing a big show somewhere and there's a lot of people outside.
Every single person.
I need to get to every single.
To every single one.
Yeah. And I don't do that begrudgingly, and I think that's actually a good use of it because they're there, they waited, and I want to do that, but it can be very dangerous. I'm not in a relationship with those people. Yeah. I mean, I have been sometimes, and it's really, you know, really caused trouble in my marriage. Totally, totally a lie. Please don't come after me. But I do think that that is something that you bring up that I think is quite true. When people act like another quote you have is never allow someone else to become your other half.
Yeah.
Because people talk about that all the time in relationships. Like, this is my other half. I can't live without them. And I think you talk about this really well.
I think it's – let's not deny that being in love is a brilliant thing. Finding someone who truly loves you for who you are is something that we all deserve and should strive to find. But to build your personality and your persona around someone else, I just find it so – insane. Like, it's you are your own person. Like, to get into the relationship, you had to have been something. That person fell in love with your ideas, with who you are, with, and of course you grow and you change together, and it's important to be influenced by the person that you love, because you've got a responsibility to the person that loves you to not make them love a piece of shit. Like, you know, if my fiance really, really loves me and like I really try my hardest, like the reason I'm a good person now isn't because I want to be a good person, but it's because I don't want to make her look like a fucking idiot. But she's not my other half. Like, I would be very upset and broken without her for a period of time, and it would take me a long time to get over it. But, you know, she wasn't my world beforehand. She's my world now. I hope she will be forever. I mean, that's why you make that promise to each other. But to get into a relationship where you cannot imagine surviving without them, I don't know. It's just an you live however many years of your life before you met this person,
right?
And if you were happy in those years, and that person you were, they fell in love with. Don't lose it. Don't become this. You know, I don't know how common it is in America, but do people have like joined Facebook accounts over here?
You know, it's so funny. I have Kona Co.
Yep.
Has a Facebook presence. I myself am not on Facebook, and I have never been on Facebook. I've never spent any time on a Facebook page, and I know nothing about it.
Aye.
Because it scares me.
You're not missing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Facebook died really about 6 years ago. Twitter died about 2 years ago. I've managed to come off of both. And I definitely know less about the world, but my God, am I less sad. Like, I think human beings were not designed for a constant stream of information.
Oh, no.
If we've learned anything in the past couple of years, it's that knowing everything that's going on all the time is absolutely detrimental to everyone's mental health.
Yes, yes. We are not, you know, they'll tell you, you turn on the news and you'll be reading about someone who did something, you know, put an animal into a microwave in some other part of the world, and how they're under arrest now. And I'll think, why did I need to know this?
Yeah.
I find myself sad, and the image of it horrifies me, and I think about it a few times a day, and I'm being bombarded constantly with, by the way, did you know in this part of the world you've never heard of, one person tore the jaw off another person and beat them to death in the street? And again, we were meant to live in, you know, meant to live in small villages, occasionally hear some bad news, occasionally hear some good news, and die. I mean,
that's why colonialism, you know, worked, because there was no international news. Like, all the Brits would be sat there, and then the army would come back and they were like, hey, we found this new bit of land called India. And we were like, oh, was there anyone there? And they were like, no, it was completely empty. But look at all the tea we found. And we're like, oh, what is this tea? And because there was no news to let us know the atrocities we were committing, we were like, this is great.
Right.
We're just a really good country that found tea somewhere.
So what we're deciding right now is that ignorance truly is bliss.
100%. It's the best. I mean, it's not good for human progression as a society, but...
You know, I was with you. I believe that we are getting bombarded with too much negative information, but when you compared it to best not to know that India is inhabited, I couldn't go with you.
That's fair enough. That's also where I would have jumped out on the bit.
Yeah, exactly. That's where you have to go. You know, I'm curious what you... Well, first of all, you mentioned you have a fiancé now, yes, which intrigues me because you've been so famously, you know, single. Is this not true that you had a goal? Your goal once was to have sex with more than 100 people. Was that your goal at one point in your life?
Yeah, yeah, it was. And when you, I mean, when you say it now, and it sounds sad, and it was, but like, that's mad. When I was young, like, I had no idea.
I had the same vow, but it was a very different number.
Oh, 1,000, you dog.
It was four. It was four people. And I was giving myself 65 years for four people. And I'm still cracking away at it.
Well, that'll teach you with your, falling in love.
You with your 100 people.
Well, like, I got into comedy at such a young age, and I was just trying to be a comedian. Like, I wasn't myself. I wasn't in my own voice. I was just, you know, doing an impression of a comedian for as long as possible. And just all the comedians that I met, like, every single one of them just had all these stories from going on the road and sleeping around. And I was like, oh, that's what you do. And, like, that's how you become. Because I was never good with, like, I was largely ignored by girls and high school and primary school and stuff, and I never had the confidence with it. So I was like, oh, that's what you do. You just do this, and that'll build my confidence, and then that'll make me an adult, and it'll make me happy. And I mean, it did make me happy a bunch of times. I'm not going to say I regret the whole conquest. I think it was a gross goal to have, and retrospectively, I can, like, I mean, I shudder at the fact that I did genuinely think, like, oh, this is cool, and this is what I want to do.
Right. But now you are engaged to be married, and this brings up all kinds of questions for me. First of all, Scottish wedding.
Yes.
I was invited to a wedding. A good friend of mine who I've known forever, Henry, who's a regular listener. Hey there, Henry. Henry got married a number of years ago. I don't know, about 20 years ago, I'm going to guess, or maybe less. But anyway, not the point. He had kind of a Scottish wedding. And because I was in the wedding party, I was told I needed to get a kilt and the whole
excellent
outfit. And I wasn't looking forward to it. And so, and because my wife is of, you know, Scotch Welsh descent.
Yeah. Does she have her own tartan?
Yes. They have a family tartan. So okay. I went and I got a kilt made in my wife's family tartan.
Do you know which one it is?
I don't. They all look, okay. I got to be honest with you, they all look the same to me. They all look like a sweater. Like that kilt, you know, check thing. Whatever, the lines going one way and the other, and it's...
Plaid!
Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't know the word plaid.
The lines going one way.
This is like the other, on the podcast a couple of months ago, I needed to describe a package, I was trying to describe a FedEx guy bringing a package and I couldn't come up with the word package. And so I had the guy go, here's your, and I paused and I went, unit. Because I couldn't come up with the word package. And I just said that plaid is, what is it? I said it's lines. Lines going one way and the other. I'm sorry.
I can't breathe.
I'm sorry, Sona. I'm having a complete collapse of
my
cerebellum. But anyway, I wasn't looking forward to it. And then the kilt showed up and it was the whole thing, the kilt and the socks. And the dagger that you wear around like your calf muscle.
Yeah,
what's that called?
It's, oh God, I'm going to be a terrible Scotsman here. Ski and do.
Yeah, okay.
A ski and do.
A ski and do. And the thing that goes around sort of your crotch that you can
keep.
There's
the sporran eye, the sporran.
Yeah, it's basically a fanny pack that was invented 800 years ago.
Yeah, they used to put porridge in it because it kept your balls warm. That was the...
Anyway, I put this thing on and I'm telling everyone who's listening, it was the most comfortable thing I've ever worn.
Yep.
And I looked fucking great. I looked like a badass. I loved it. I wish I could wear that every day. And I loved having a knife, a dagger on my calf. I just loved it. And I was ready. I wanted someone to attack me at any moment so I could whip it out and get into it.
Ready to defend the bridal party should it be required.
So I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
You can wear, I mean, kilts are also, I mean, they're Irish as well. Like, you know, you're allowed to wear those to fancy occasions. I have to ask, did you go true Scotsman?
I did not.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, that's allowed because you're not a true Scotsman.
Well, I didn't know. I also, I didn't even think about it. I just wore underwear because, I, you know, there was a period of my time when I didn't and rode the subway and I was arrested. I did some things I shouldn't have done. It was a confusing part of my life.
Yeah. And afterwards, put a sign down that says Conan once stood here. Just
I would bend over to put a plaque down on the subway that said Conan stood here, and my stuff would fall out, and I was tackled. This is all true.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Come on.
It's all true. All true stories.
It sounds like a very short kilt that you had on.
I had a mini kilt.
Yeah,
I was basically dressed like Serena Vanderwoodson on Gossip Girl.
Wow, you remembered her name, but you couldn't remember Plaid.
I couldn't remember Plaid, but I just came up with Serena Vanderwoodson. That's crazy. And I can't come up with the word package, but I know Chuck Bass. Also a Gossip Girl reference. This is insanity.
Wow. Okay.
Listen, my brain knows how to prioritize. But I'm very excited for you because reading the book and knowing your journey, I think you're going to be a very happy married fellow. And where's the wedding going to be?
It's going to be in Scotland.
Do you live in Edinburgh? I know that's where the comedy festival is.
Yeah. Yeah,
I live in Edinburgh. You know what? I was thinking about going to that comedy festival just when COVID broke out.
Yeah. It'll be back. Like, it was on a little bit this year, but next year it'll be back in full swing and then it'll
I would love to go there.
You got
to
do it, man.
I would love to go there and I've heard it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Yeah. It's an insane thing to be part of. Like, the population of Edinburgh doubles for the month of August. Like, there are literally, I think, 600 or 700 shows on a day, and like 200 or 300 of them are comedy. It's from anywhere from 7 a.m. until 5 a.m. the next day. The drinking laws change. You can drink publicly. Everything turns into a venue. Like, it's, you know, like tiny little cafes turn into 70-seaters. Like, I've once seen a gig in just a janitor's closet, and the venue capacity was 2 people, including the performer. And, like, that was a show. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of shit on, but, like, that's the fun.
Yeah, it's like anything else. It's like streaming television or the internet. There's tons of crap and then it's just absolutely amazing stuff. It's volume. Whenever you get volume, there's going to be tons of crap.
Yeah, lots of little flakes of shite. But it's such a good experience. Like, I mean, I'm a huge fan of all the Conan Without Borders stuff, but I've always just been trying to push, you know, the idea that you should definitely go and do it.
You know what I would do? I would, and it would be fun, I would love to go do a travel show to Scotland, and I would love it if I got you involved, because I think we could have a lot of – that would be a really fun show to do. You could show me around.
We stay at the same Airbnbs, share a bed, like a real in the Highlands. And
I was going to start with share a bed. And then, but I'll be wearing 9 pairs of underwear.
Put one of the plaques on my back that says Conan once stood here.
Daniel, it has been an absolute joy talking to you. It's in your blood. You're just such a funny, great, smart, intricate person to talk to. So today I was just overjoyed to get to speak to you, and I'm so happy for all of your success. I really am.
Thank you very much, man. And it's always a beyond a joy to get to do this. It blows my mind.
And
I get to. So thank you.
Well, no, of course. And Everyone You Hate Is Going to Die is really a very funny book, but it's also got a lot of truth in it and a lot of intelligence, and it's all ladled in your terrific wit. And so I recommend this book. I recommend Daniel Sloss. If you have not watched his specials, Jigsaw, Dark, you have a new one.
I'm on tour with Hubris at the moment.
Hubris. Yeah. Have you found that Americans, because you're so well known in so many parts of the world, are Americans receptive to you?
Oh, yeah. I love gigging in the States. And it was always such a huge deal for me to whenever I got to perform over here at all. Like, I remember first time I performed at the Denver Comedy Works being like, oh, my God, like, I'm a real comedian now. Like, I'm in America doing comedy in the capital of comedy, which is all of the States. Like, we can make like the stereotypical jokes that like all Americans are stupid, blah, blah, blah. But comedically, I think you're some of the most intelligent audiences in the world comedically, because comedy, even if it wasn't started here, it was perfected here. Like, it's there's been such a long history of stand-up over the years. When we think of all the greats, 80% of them are Americans. And you're such a comedy savvy and literate audience that coming out here to get to perform is such an exciting thing, because I mean, so few British comics have been given, you know, the chance to like get to perform out here to do it, and to there's so much energy in the rooms. Americans, because you're so confident,
maybe a little overconfident at times.
Yeah, but but the confidence, you're the only audience in the world that can laugh as individuals. Right.
That's interesting.
It doesn't happen anywhere else. Like in the UK, in Australia, in Europe, people laugh as a collective, because I don't want to laugh at something fucked up if the person beside me not laughing, because then everyone will know I'm laughing at the fucked up thing. That level of scrutiny and fear doesn't exist. I've been at gigs in America where there's a comedian on stage and there's 400 people in the crowd and only three people are enjoying him. But those three people are enjoying the fuck out of him. Yeah. And they're proud. They don't care what anyone else in the room thinks. They're like, I like this and I trust me, so I'm going to enjoy this wholeheartedly.
It's beautiful to see that. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I love seeing, I mean, obviously we both know there are a lot of comedians. It's easy because everybody instinctively wants success. It's in our evolutionary makeup. We want to succeed. We want to do well. And then all the small compromises that you may need to make as a comedian in order to regularly get laughs. And then the next thing you know, you're not who you wanted to be. And so when people have that discipline to say, this is who I am, this is what I want to do, it's a beautiful thing to see. And Daniel, you've done that countless times. You are just a really original voice. And again, lovely to talk to you again. Really looking forward to getting invited to the wedding, yes. and flown out at your cost, not mine.
100%. Yeah, yeah.
But really, congratulations on everything, and Everyone You Hate Is Gonna Die. Check out this book. It's really fun.
Thanks very much, man.
All right, I just need to comment on something. This was not planned, but both the people with me today, Sona Mousasian. Hi, Sona.
Hi.
Yeah, and Sona's assistant, David Hopping, are chomping like mad on what are you eating?
I'm eating a bar. A granola bar.
A granola bar.
Yeah.
Okay, what kind of, is it a healthy bar?
Yeah.
Where'd you get it?
I don't know. I got it from in here at Earwolf. I always.
Yeah, but those bars have not been restocked. This place has been shuttered. This place has been shuttered since COVID. This is like we broke into an Arctic tent that was left behind by Shackleton in like 1911. And we found some food and you immediately started chomping on it.
Yeah.
Those bars are at least 2 to 3 years old.
They might be. You're right.
I know they expire. Right.
Yeah.
Is there an expiration date? No.
Maybe we don't want to know.
I don't know. But it's good. It's vegan.
It says vote for George W. Bush on the front. I don't know when they started putting that on. But that's an old bar. And why are you, what are you eating?
I just brought one from home.
What? Let me see that. Is that even healthy?
It's not.
This is just a chocolate bar that they said is a health bar, but it's not.
Yeah, it's really good.
This is how unprofessional both of you are. You both broke out bars that are wrapped in paper and started chomping away like mules on an apple, and we were going to record.
It is a loud snack. It's like when you're in a theater and you're like, you know.
There's a lot of this.
Come on.
No, this is what you were doing when we were trying to record.
We both did scoot back a little bit from the mic. So
you could still, these are sensitive mics. You can hear that.
Mm-hmm. We were hungry.
And then you're like, You have no work ethic. That's unbelievable.
Come on. You're just figuring that out now?
And you hired me. Sona trained me.
Oh, yeah. Sona trained you. Oh, I love that Sona trained you.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I trained him.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What did she tell you? Well, when you start podcasting, always make sure you find the loudest bar.
Give me my food bag.
Kashi makes a bar that has extra crunch, crackle, crinkle, crunkle.
I like eating, and I eat a lot. And, you know, we've been here, we've been recording, and there's just, you know, nothing else to eat. So I ate this.
I eat before the podcast. I try to make sure I'm responsible that way so that I'm not, you know, but I guess you guys have inspired me for our next session. I'm going to buy one of those really big candied Virginia hams that you get through the mail, and I'm going to have it hanging on a rope right above, right where my microphone is. And I'm going to be gnawing on it. Just gnawing on it. And saying, oh, next guest today. Oh, got a clove. Hold on a second.
Oh, man.
Get that clove out. There we go. Our next guest today. And then we get into it. You know, I'm not going
to
do that.
If you wanted to eat a ham, I would let you eat a ham. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say anything about it. And I think that, you know, we're hungry and you're making fun of us for eating. I think you just, you
know. And if you get a whole ham, then you can share with us. And that
you don't want
nice.
No one wants to eat share a ham with me.
Okay. Dangle it.
Have you watched me eat with my family around?
No, but I've seen you eat lunch and it's like your family is hovering around you.
Yes. And I do that thing that, and someone pointed it out to me once. They say that prisoners do this. People that have been in penitentiaries, they make a barrier with their arms around their food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do that because of the way we would all sit around, Neil, Luke, Kate, Jane, Justin, my grandmother was there, my father was there. My mom would just toss a ham into the center of the ring. You see, you ever seen the scene where they lower like the sheep in Jurassic Park,
yes,
into the pit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just, and then they haul it up again and the sheep's no longer there. There's just the leather straps and some blood.
Yeah.
That's what would happen. My mom would throw a ham into the center of the room. Yeah.
Wow. Sounds rough.
What if you took it out of the wrapper before you entered the studio? What about that?
Well, I still have to chew it.
Yeah, but at least we get rid of the rapper sound.
Okay, hold on. Okay.
Now it looks like you have chewing tobacco.
I know.
You look like you play in Major League Baseball.
It's so sticky, too. I hate being the loud person. I mean, one time—
Well, excuse me? You hate being the loud person?
Come on.
Wow.
I know what
you
I
hate being the loud person.
I meant, with rappers—
That's like Stalin saying, I don't want to be the bully. You know, it's insane.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
It is exactly
Stalin
the same.
Saying that.
Well, he was a world famous bully, and you, you know, a tyrannical dictator, and you are the loudest person I've ever met.
That's not true.
Loud, very
that
loud.
That can't be true.
Very true.
You no, I know that's not true because you have a friend Eric who's louder than I am, and so you're wrong. That's point one. I win that one.
No.
Congratulations
to
me.
My friend Eric is not as loud as you.
Yes, he is.
He can speak loudly at times, but he is not nearly as loud as you. Often, I'm talking to you and I think we're on the phone, and I can just hear you from your home that's 40 miles from where I live.
Wait, so we're not on the phone?
We're not on the phone. I go, I hear Conan, and I go, oh, hey, what's up, Sona? And where do you live? What's the neighborhood? It's not even in L.A.
Altadena. It is in Los Angeles.
Not really. Anyway,
yeah, it is.
You are so far away, you have to change your currency before you hit her neighborhood.
Oh.
Anywho, bring your passport.
it's right north of Pasadena.
It's very far. It's very, very
it
far.
It is not far at all.
I think it, I don't know. I just, stop crinkling for no reason.
I know.
You're done with that.
It bothered me because it was all wrinkled up. Okay, now it's here.
Oh, good. Yeah, now the package is unwrinkled.
Nice.
That's terrific. Anyhoots, there are many times where you and I are chatting, and then I realize I'm not even on the phone. I can hear you all the way from Altadena.
Well, I don't...
That's exaggeration,
that
right?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe a little bit.
Exaggeration is a form of comedy.
anyway, so what I'm saying is I don't like being in a quiet environment. I don't like the one who's like crinkling and stuff. Like if I'm at a play or a movie.
Or maybe... taping a podcast.
Or taping a... I don't mind it so much here.
Why don't you come in with those little plastic wrapping bubbles that pop next time and just pop those while we're trying to talk?
Yeah, okay. I'll do it.
No, is that real or sarcastic?
Will it bother you? If it'll bother you, probably I'll do it.
Was that sarcastic or real?
Yeah, I'll do it.
No, it was a sarcastic voice.
Oh my God. Incredible. Your whole generation confounds me. Confounds me. All right.
It's
well,
a great generation.
Listen, we please, let's have a new rule. Let's at least institute a rule. Matt Gourley is gone. Of course, he's on maternity leave now. Because everybody wants to have a baby. I think we should institute a rule. No food in the podcast studio. This is a sacred space where we do sacred work. And I think we should respect that. And I think you should leave your chewy dips and your Choco health sea salt bars. Mm. You should leave them out of here. And if you need a break and you want to go and have a snack outside the studio, you're fired.
Oh.
It's that simple.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. No, you never do.
Yeah, but you fake fired us like every day, so yeah. I wouldn't believe it.
Oh.
Well, half the time it's been real. You guys just don't pay attention.
Mm. We still get paid, so.
I know. That's the part I haven't quite figured out. I'm constantly firing people, and then I continue to pay them. All right. Well, anyway, new rule. Do we all agree?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Whatever you say, boss.
Incredible.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This episode was produced and edited by me, Brett Morris.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.